What's your take on training in the industry, you know, for a business owner's viewpoint?
That's a rabbit hole that you can go down here.
Yeah, it's a big
sorry.
In-person education stuff where we realized it doesn't matter how much hair someone learns, it still doesn't solve the core problem that they actually have. You can be the best in the world at square layers, best in the world at graduation, best in the world at fading. If people don't know about it or you're not getting paid appropriately for it, eventually people still don't enjoy what they're doing.
Business is a mechanism. I have this weird thing with money and business and all these things, but it's a very one-sided relationship. We care about money, it doesn't care about us. We care about business doesn't care about us, you know?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I am here with Owen McCarthy. Hi, Owen. Yeah. And Lee Windsor, who are Unlimited Business Coaching. Is that
right? That's right.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
We've nearly crossed paths many, many times. We've been in the same building. We've been in the same room, but always been distracted and never met. So I think over the 2 years of us doing this for most of 24, we've tried to get to this point. So glad you're in London, and thanks for giving us some time.
That's a pleasure.
Pleasure to be here, mate.
I'm interested how you two guys met, how this union came together, because you do certainly online seem to spend an awful lot of your lives together. How does that work? How did that happen?
You want to tell the story, babe? Or?
Yeah.
Do you want to leave it to me?
It's a serendipitous story, actually.
First things first, anyway, we share the same birthday, which is
That's true.
Very interesting fact, right? So maybe the stars and the crystals aligned and then we met. But we used to work together in a barbershop. That's kind of how we met. But we actually first met at a hair competition. And you know, on the hair competitions, they have like the mirrors on the small tables that are like the folding mirrors. We were sharing one of those. Right. And we didn't know each other at the time at all. I just thought, who's this shredded guy with weird fake tan on? Because he was a bodybuilder. And he thought that I was weird because I was there with my mother, who's a hairdresser and has had a salon for many, many years. So that's how we met initially. Mm. We didn't really speak that day, but then the men's boys actually came over to Australia shortly after that. Lee was doing some filming and modeling for them and stuff. And we were kind of friendly with them. So we kind of kept meeting, hair competitions, stuff like that. And then long story short, we ended up working together in the same barbershop in Australia. And the rest is kind of history.
Did one of you provoke the other into, because obviously your careers have tacked together throughout, and certainly now with the coaching. Was that something, you know, a boozy, chatty evening that progressed you to that? Or did one of you go, hey, let's do this together? How did that relationship start, or that business start?
Yeah. How do you remember that, Lee?
I remember, well, the education started quite naturally, didn't it? I think you were working with Andis. It kind of originally started with Owen working for Andis. So I was doing a few bits individually, but not working for a brand. It was just kind of off my own back kind of stuff. People reaching out on Instagram and asking for classes. And Owen was doing it on a bit of a bigger scale with the brand. And I think we were working for a barbershop in Melbourne, one of the best barbershops in Australia at the time. And it was a big brand, very well known. And we were speaking about for a while to do our own education company within that brand. And I think the big catalyst was around lockdown time, wasn't it? When we took it like super seriously.
You were in Oz for lockdown.
Yeah. So we kind of launched our education careers in Australia. So we were doing classes as that brand before, but the real catalyst for us to really take it to the next level and cut off everything else and go fully like self-funded was around the lockdown time. Wow. Yeah.
So like we were discussing before, like off camera, up to that point, we were only kind of doing education as a bit of a side gig, like a bit of a side hustle, and like a mistress, like you were talking about. And then, you know, that kind of gave us the kick up the arse to just be like, hey, maybe I should take this thing a bit more seriously and actually make it a business, because not many people do. So when not many people do something, that is a signal to me that it's an opportunity. And in Australia at that time, when I moved there, 2016, 2017, that was around like, I don't know, like the boom of like barbering, right? Like the precision world and the hairdressing world, sure. It was all kind of crossing over and nobody had done that in Australia. So what we were kind of bringing at that time was just so like, wow, this is insane. So we had to capitalize on it the same way menswear, I guess, capitalized on it here in the UK. It's like, well, nobody's going to do it over in Australia. So why not us, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the way that it went. And I was just a bit like ballsy. You know, I'd only been doing hair for like 2 years at that time. And I was just a bit like, oh, fuck it. Like, who, like, I'll just share what I know.
Yeah.
And that's all I can do. I'm not going to pretend to be anything that I'm not. I'm not going to try and pretend like I know everything. Like, I couldn't even talk to you about the steps of like a mid-length or a longer haircut when I started teaching for Andis, but that wasn't what I was employed to do then. Mm. It was just to teach fading. So I started there.
Yeah.
But the act of like teaching actually allowed me to learn hair. You know, I like learned I learned more about hair through teaching it because people were asking questions I didn't have the answer for, but I had to think about. And I would be honest, I would say, well, I don't know the answer for it, but then I'd go home and think about it and I should probably find out the answer for that thing and get better. And that's kind of how it started. And, you know, there was a moment in lockdown where I looked across the room at my partner and I just said, what if I don't go back to the barbershop? And that's when it really kind of like sparked for me. I was like, yeah, no, I need to take this education thing seriously. And that's a scary thing to do at the time. And we deal with a lot of people now in our business at the moment who want to transition from, say, having a barbershop or a full chair into education. But there's this kind of thought process that I need to sacrifice something or I need to lose something in order to gain something else. Kind of speaking to opportunity cost. It's like, what if it doesn't work, right? Or then I'm losing money because I'm working on building this education program. But the loss is already there. Like the bigger loss already exists by like not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so people.
Well, I guess you've got that, isn't it? It's hard to let go of one vine before you've grabbed hold of the next one.
Yeah.
But it's all in the swing, isn't it?
100%. And like, you know, we all do it. Like hair is done for people to make money at the end of the day, right? Like we do it so that it's a job so we can put food on the table, survive, pay our bills, do whatever it is we need to do. So like cutting off your resources is not the smartest idea, especially when you're on the other side of the world like we were in Australia.
And also just because here lockdown for us in the UK was total. Hairdressers, barbers, everyone was locked down and that was that. In Melbourne, well, Australia itself had very different rules, isn't it? Shops were still open, weren't they? What was happening in Melbourne?
Melbourne ended up having the worst lockdown in the world.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, we had, in the end, it was the longest lockdown. So we were in and out of...
They were shutting shops and so there were periods where you couldn't...
Well, there was months where we were just out of the shop and that it was a blessing in disguise,
and
really.
That helped you go.
Absolute blessing, because we were on the phone every day to each other, building out our courses, building out our thing, and really gave us a chance to go deep on it, fully go deep on it every day, just devote every day to it.
Yeah.
And like we got back to the real world, you know, when everything opened up again, everyone's like, oh, that was terrible, wasn't it? We were like, that was amazing.
It was either like, an opportunity or it was like wasted, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, when it opened up, you didn't go back in at all, or did you go back a bit?
Yeah, no,
you went back for a while and filled your boots like everyone else did for a...
No, and like we kind of started, so the in-person education started because there was two lockdowns in Melbourne. So the in-person education started full-time after that. We're still doing a couple of clients here and there, but significantly reduced our books. And that allowed us to like put our prices up. And it's in this period where we kind of discovered good ways and not so good ways to put your prices up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we do now. We kind of specialize in that. One of the things that we help people with the most is, how do I put my prices up? How do I charge more? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We know that process so well because we have done it, but it's a lot easier to do it when you're not cutting off your main resource. So like I always talk about, like, you kind of wind one down while you kind of bring the other up until it just completely outweighs the other one. And towards the end, it was actually costing us more money to cut people's hair than it was not to.
But then you've moved into this very successful field that wasn't as crowded. I mean, it's a very crowded space now. Certainly the online education is a very busy place. And I did have a good look back at your earlier stuff. And by comparison to a lot of people who were doing stuff at the time, it was you were doing a great job of it.
Yeah.
Very early on. Mm. Why let go of that vine for the coaching vine? What provoked the move to give up what was very successful, very needed, very wanted, that essentially a marketplace you were leading, I guess, or certainly in the pack of leaders? Why give up online teaching for online coaching?
Great question.
I've been doing this a while.
Yeah, it's a great question. The main thing that I think of that comes to my mind first is opportunity cost. Based on the life we wanted to live, maybe the impact we wanted to make and the freedom that we wanted to have within like what we wanted for our lives, right? It's flexibility, travel. Because full-time education, it looks a lot nicer online than it actually is in reality. You know, like last year when we traveled and did the tour around the UK and Ireland, like I did nearly 50 flights last year. That's a lot of time away on the road, like traveling. It's not as glamorous as people may think. Now it's worth it for sure. Otherwise we wouldn't have done it. But the second lockdown really made us like, I guess, get creative with how are we actually going to get our education to more people. And the online education for us is just more of like a funnel. It's like bring people into our world. They can understand what it's about. Like all of the information's there, but people would then still want to pay for the implementation because they just couldn't do it by themselves, or they need the context, or like us to be there, look over their shoulder, or even just pay to like come and do it and make sure that they actually take it seriously. But, you know, we operate our business now on like the theory of constraints. So like the lockdowns actually gave us a constraint. It's like, well, we can't work. So what are we going to do? All right, first lockdown, let's build the education business. Second lockdown comes, oh, well, now we can't even run the education business. What do we do? Online education business. And at that time, that was around 2020. There wasn't as many. It wasn't as flooded. But when we opened back up, we filled like our books with education in person. And we've tried a lot of different things. We've thrown a lot of spaghetti at the wall. But it got to a stage, to answer your question, it got to a stage with the in-person education stuff where we realized that it doesn't matter how much hair someone learns, it still doesn't solve the core problem that they actually have. Like you can be the best in the world at square layers, best in the world at graduation, best at the world at fading. But if people don't know about it or you're not getting paid appropriately for it, eventually people still don't enjoy what they're doing, or it just doesn't work. It doesn't give them the life that they want to live, you know, or they just don't make profit at all. So we realized it doesn't matter how good we make people at hair, if they don't have the other skills to like actually take that and bring it to a market or brand themselves correctly or market their stuff, then they just will never sell it. And if they don't sell it, they don't make money. They don't make money, they die. So we're let's solve that problem instead, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but.
Oh, that was great. The big thing, one of the big things is we're really big on like decision filters. So in our lives, you might notice from our content or our journey that we're not afraid to shelf an idea. And I know you think, why did you change that? Why did you change that? And I think that's one of our powers, is we're not afraid to change or shelf an idea. And how did we get to that point? Well, we actually had to develop a filter to put all of our decisions through. So we have like our unlimited model, which is how we help our business owners, but we also help them develop like value stacks of how they make decisions in their lives. And that really helps us, because if it goes against our values, so one of them, for example, right now we live by like a W's approach. We want to work on like what we want, wherever we want, whenever we want, with whoever we want. Like if it violates one of those, we have a serious think about whether we do it or not.
Right.
And so with, you think about hair education, for example, boots on the streets, you can still be locked to a location. So that doesn't mean you can work wherever you want, whenever you want. So that's where it got to us. Remember, we're doing it full time as well.
Yeah.
Like I'm talking like every week. Yeah. So that means you are locked to a location every week. And that started to impede on our freedom, what we, you know, options and choices of where we are in location. And that just came as a decision. We, again, operating off the theory of constraints, we're like, is there a different way? And there was.
Yeah.
And there is.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And that's basically how we operate.
I mean, I quite like that chatting earlier. Most of my career, I've had a conversation about, you know, knocking down your walls, taking down your fences, moving past the kind of areas that you constrain yourself in. And when we first met, Lee, you were talking about your stories that you grew up with in Plymouth that you had to kind of delete to get yourself, you know, to Melbourne and working and now doing what you're doing. And I think that's quite interesting. That to me is the core of coaching. It is about kind of rewiring and retuning your outlook on life, that you can see past that fence and you can see a bit further. While I've got the two of you who are well placed at the kind of slightly higher up on the hilltop, that you can look out and see a slightly clearer view of our industry, because you don't have a barbershop, and I think you've probably explained previously why you haven't, but you can cover that if you want to as we go. But I'm really intrigued as to how you two, you know, you both have been barbers, you've gone through the training process, you've experienced success as a barber in the fact of a busy column in a cool shop or a respected employer and that kind of stuff. You've then perfected that into education and taken that into a successful education platform. And obviously where you are now. How, when you look at our industry now with the experience you've got and probably that kind of two steps away from the heat of the fire, how do you see our industry going? Because I have a lot of conversations with storekeepers and shop owners who have got ones, two small chains even, who do find there's kind of, you know, training, apprenticeship, staff retention, you know, getting new clients, fighting it out on a crowded high street. Blaming the government for taking too much of our money, which I'm not going to disagree with, but you know what I mean, that you have all these kind of problems that really do feel, over the amount of time that Luke and I have kind of discussed this afterwards, that there are these kind of constraints, and your whole business model now is about ignoring those constraints or seeing through those constraints. How do you see the problems that we talk about or have spoken about in the pod? If we take training, for example, as a store owner, we hear problems about apprentices and being able to afford apprentices and training. What's your take on training in the industry as a, you know, for a business owner's viewpoint?
That's a rabbit hole as we can go down here.
Yeah, it's a big
sorry.
No, it's good. It's good.
It's a good one though. Yeah.
I think to touch on one thing before I'll pass it to Lee then to get the party started. But one thing I will touch on is the constraints thing. It's like you can either view a constraint as a roadblock or the thing that is in your way to like bring you towards what is necessary. And I think from my experience being in Australia, now being back here doing the tour that we did last year, speaking to hundreds of barbers in person, online, you know, thousands in our career, like some of the things that I feel hold people back the most is like just not moving frequently enough with the times. Like I look at it like a chessboard, right? It's like every time, say, the government makes a move on the chessboard, we need to make a move. If something goes up by a certain amount in terms of tax, the prices need to go up to reflect that. And I think barbering is like behind, and like hairdressing is also behind. It's not just barbering. So a lot of businesses actually are, and that's why they end up shutting down and closing. Like my mother, before she closed her salon, she retired last year. She just couldn't do the pain anymore. But there was also another pain, which was profit, that she didn't really have much of, because what I later discovered was that she didn't put her prices up for 7 years. And it's like, there's probably a lot of people out there that are in similar situations. And that's just choking the business. It's just strangling the business to its death.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, what a word that we hear a lot when we work with barbers particularly is like guilt, and people feeling guilty around putting their prices up or charging their clients more and so on and so forth. So I think one of the biggest things really is like communication, brand, and getting actually creative. And here's a contrarian thought, but I actually don't think, you know, in one capacity, barbering is very creative. In another capacity, there's not many creative people in it. because if people were that creative, they'd figure a way out of their own problem.
Sure.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yep, like, no, from a business perspective, like, I would say that I'm not that creative with hair. I did the basics and I did them very well. I just focused on those. And then I'd add the 3% to the end. But from a business perspective and getting creative about, like, so where are we going to go next? And how are we going to go from an education business to a coaching business? And then what kind of models do we have to use? And, like, how do I see this playing out in the future? Future-proofing, like, ourselves. That's why we've moved from where we were at our peak, per se, to shutting down the education business and just doing coaching. Because sometimes the numbers don't lie either. You can just look at the, you can look at the facts and the feelings. Yeah. I think a lot of the time people are stuck in the feelings and ignoring the facts. Sometimes the facts for a business owner is this doesn't make money. And the feelings are, but I feel guilty and I want to serve my clients. And, like, those worlds, they don't cross over very well. Yeah. But the numbers don't lie. Like, when we shut down the education business and stopped doing it in person, I remember being at a three-day course in Dublin and talking to the guys there about stopping. And they were like, I just can't believe, like, you'd stop this. Like, it's working really well. It's like, you're here. There's eight of us here. We're all paying X amount to be here. They're doing the maths.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, but I can only do this like 10 times a year, this course, this particular one. Whereas, you know, if I focus on, say, the online space, working with people in that space and on a different thing, when you do the maths, it adds up to more. And I get more of my time back. So it's always looking for leverage. Like, yeah, that's what we're always looking for. It's like, how can we find leverage in what we're doing? And I think that's maybe a constraint for people within the hair space. But Lee's probably got some interesting thoughts on your question as well.
Yeah, that we went in the money direction there, didn't we? It was kind of sitting on training. And look, I think, like Owen said, the numbers don't lie. One of our coaches, shout out to Gavin, he's our numbers and finance coach, he says, you know, if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. I would go as far as say, if you don't know your numbers, you don't even know your life. You know, because money is kind of what makes the world go round at the moment. It's hard to change that. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with Ray Dalio does a great explanation of how the economic systems and the machines actually work in the world. If you pay attention to markets, they all rely on supply and demand. It's a beautiful explanation about how all markets on the planet work. One person's spending is another person's income. Just such a simple line, right? So we can't ignore the numbers. But like Owen was kind of alluding to, everything that we're alluding to here, you rarely have a business problem. You always have a you problem. And
you're the biggest obstacle
in the way. You're always the biggest obstacle, right? And everything we get back to is really, a lot of people are a little bit too emotional about the vehicle and they get married to the vehicle. And I think if you're too emotional about it, you could get stuck.
Yeah. But you hear so many people saying it's my baby. I'm a big advocate of being part of the community.
Yeah.
You see the kind of community-led barbershops. Yeah. You see the kind of emotion, exactly that, the emotional connection to a business.
Yeah, yeah.
Bricks and mortar.
Yeah, and that's fine. And that's absolutely fine. Of course, it serves humans and we're emotional beings. But the business is a mechanism. And I have this weird thing with money and business and all these things. It's a very one-sided relationship. You know, we care about money. It doesn't care about us. We care about business. Business doesn't care about us, you know. So I think that's something really important to take into consideration when we're thinking about all of this stuff. And what forms our opinions and what we believe on all of this is the stories that we're told growing up. We had this chat off camera. You know, what got me to where I am? Well, I had to seriously, curiously, and critically look at all the stories that I'd been told growing up about what I believed was true about the world, me, and money and business. And I had to seriously look at those and go, well, number one, are they true? Yes or no? Doesn't matter if it is or not. Let me just find that out first. Number two, is it useful? And if it's not useful, I better delete it as fast as possible and put a new one in there. Because what do we know about stories? Well, a lot of them are made up and they're told to us by someone. And that's how we have the world that we have, based on a bunch of stories that we told us to get us to this point. So if we tell a bunch of stories to get us to this point, how do we change anything? We have to tell a different story. That's all anything ever is a story that we've been told, or keep telling ourselves about what this is. So to the big umbrella over all of this, the industry, barbering, hair, whatever it is, there's at large a story that's being told about what this even is. And the cool thing now about grown adults in this world living in Western countries like we do is, last time I checked, we still have options and choice about what stories we get to tell. We're not at war yet. There's not famine, you know. We're pretty privileged still. Mm. You know, and I think that's largely disrespected, is a little ounce of gratitude would go a long way in this world. And I think that we're complaining about things that we can actually change, and we don't realize that we can change it, but it's based on all the stories that we're told. And a lot of people are looking for something to blame, someone to blame, when really the cool thing is we can just take an objective snapshot at what's going on and be like, well, is it working? Is it not? And let's zoom all the way out. Where does this really come from? It's no one's fault. It's a systemic problem. Like, curiosity and critical thinking is beaten out of us from a very young age. Yeah. Like, how Absolutely. Many people, this is one of the things I think separates someone who might struggle or get stuck to someone who becomes an entrepreneur or a problem solver or is, you know, wildly successful. I think it's that divide of curiosity. I've sat down with a lot of different people and we've tried to get to what is it about the difference in people. And one of them is the humility and the courage to be curious. Because you kind of got to be okay with what you find on the other side.
Yeah.
And it's beaten out of us from a very young age. And I think if we brought, it's a mixture of things as ingredients. I think if we brought back a layer of gratitude, a layer of curiosity, and a layer of critical thinking, I think we'd develop those skills. Bring that back into the industry, I think we'll see a very different place. And I think that underpins a lot. So that's from a behavioral standpoint. We could go strategy, but that underpins a lot of things. If we just want to touch on training quickly, as a business owner, what did you think you were getting into? Mm. You don't want to train your team, or you don't want to train these people, they should just show up. It's like, well, you kind of get what you give them. You know,
I mean, I think I had the conversation a lot about, you know, we can't retain our clients, there's shops up the road, they're going elsewhere. And I always think that the core part is retaining your team, that your first customer, I've always set my business up that my first customer are the team I work with. Yeah.
Well, it's a Richard Branson classic, right? Like, is how did you build such a great company? How did you do, you know, keep all the clients? He's like, well, I look after the team and the team look after the customers.
Yeah.
Team come first, yeah. Right?
Like, and that's the whole thing. I mean, if you're keeping your people and training your people, they don't go. I mean, I find a lot of conversations are, I'm not going to, you know, what's the point in training? I'll train them. They'll then go off and do their own thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, some might.
Yeah.
Some might. But if we're all training some, then you might get one of mine and I'll get one of yours. We've just seemed to have that fear of, I don't want to train anyone because they will, has kind of ruined the wheel. You know, there was always people coming through.
It's kind of the point though, isn't it? Mm. Same with education. It's like you teach people to think so they can take what you do and move forward with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of the point.
I think as a business owner, and you know, you're stepping into leadership, and a part of your role as a leader is to leave people a little better than you found them. This is Simon Sinek's work. Like, leave people a little more employable than you found them.
Yeah.
Or else what's the opposite, right? Yeah. Think about this. People say, oh, I don't want to train them just in case they leave. Well, if you don't train them and they stay.
Yeah.
Well, then you just got a shit team and you wonder why your business doesn't work.
Yeah.
Let's just get out of that
mindset.
Can't we just give to give? Yeah. And isn't the world just a better place that way?
Mm. You know? But are we finding, so the other, I think, but probably the biggest part of the change in the industry is, it's not so much about people being self-employed in share rental and working in shops. It's the amount of people who are being kind of pushed into being self-employed from the get-go, having an opportunity, you know, not having the opportunity to be mentored properly at the beginning of their career, or just self-supported, or just have that flexibility to have a look around the industry, because they're immediately trying to get a kind of studio in their garden and they're immediately trying to cut hair. And they're kind of, I always worry that young barbers coming in are kind of narrowing their field of vision from the real get-go, that actually being in a team, I think, is one of the reasons I've stayed in the industry so long. I really enjoy being part of a team dynamic.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of growth that's missed there. So when I started at my mother's salon, and I was there by myself essentially for like a year. I went to a lot of different educational events in that year. And then when I moved to Australia and I joined the team, I joined at the time, arguably the best team in Australia for men's hair. I was like, well, I'm back to square one again, you know?
Yep.
And I actually loved that feeling of like, oh, I thought I was good, but
foot
now
the mountain.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I was good, like, but I'm not really, you know. And we have people in our lives that keep us in check like that. That's why we have coaches in our world. You know, the money we do in our business, for example, if you're to measure something, it's like it's nothing in comparison to what we know is possible by just being around these people. So it's like we always feel like the eternal student then.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I think we're in this constant battle. If we're to look at the industry at large, COVID was a blessing and a curse, right? Because what happened in COVID, people started cutting each other's hair. I'll just cut my mate's hair and I'll do this and I'll do that. But we're in this constant battle between like the public's perception of what barbering is and what barbers know what barbering is, you know? And then, you know, to answer your question on, you know, should I go to the shop down the road or we can't retain clients, they're going there, they're going there. The simple answer really is just get better. Like, stop blaming everyone else, just get better. And like Lee mentioned, it's a big leadership thing that I notice. Like, I've been to a lot of industry events in Australia, hairdressing council things, and everyone's trying to like dig up like the what's the problems and how are we going to solve them. But rarely do they actually get to the real solution, because they go there mentally, but they know that if I say this out loud, it could damage my business. And there's a lot of leaders in the hair space. Again, why is us doing coaching a cool thing? Because we don't have a barbershop.
Yeah.
Because we don't have bias. So yeah, we can just say the uncomfortable thing. Whereas like, that's kind of why it works. Whereas I've been in rooms where it's like, I'll suggest something or I'll say something and it just will never be actioned because too many people lose money as a result of it. So it's not about doing, you know, it's not about who's right, it's about what's right. And there's a lot of who's in the system at large. You know, it's like people just trying to keep their own thing kind of working. And that's totally okay. But then we also can't complain on the other side that it's not working. You know, so I think it's ultimately a leadership and a demonstration thing. You know, the apprentices thing is a big thing too. We can't get young people to join the industry. No apprentices around. It's like, yeah, but they need to see better leadership.
Yeah.
You know, the people who are at the, say, helm of the industry or leading need to demonstrate and communicate that better so that more people actually find it attractive and want to do it. Because if it was attractive enough, there would never be a problem.
I mean, I guess it's where we are at the moment, this whole idea of if you can keep everyone angry about stuff, then no one ever has to admit there's a problem.
Conquer and divide, like divide can, and conquer or whatever it is.
You can
it?
Be, like, just be, you can just stay angry and never solve it.
Mm.
So we haven't spoken that much about coaching. We've spoken an awful lot about everything else, but we haven't spoken about coaching. And the principle is always in most people's head that you meet people when their businesses are doing badly and they're looking for you to save their business, or they're looking to expand their business and they want the support to do that. I think we could probably move that into part two. I appreciate the time for part one. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you have. We've been The Noble Barber. I'm Anthony Laban. Come back for part two. Cheers.
Welcome to The Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.